This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon, TSN1290.ca. Good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk, getting you set up for the latest in a series of must-win, most important games of the year for the Winnipeg Jets. They do battle with the Washington Capitals, 6 p.m. tonight, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Alongside analyst Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Our colleague Ezra is away for another show. He'll be back on Wednesday for NHL Midweek, presumably.
We hope.
He's in Vegas, so presumably. We'll hope. Well, fingers crossed on all that. We got 3 hours of hockey talk for you. As I mentioned, joining us on the program this afternoon, we're going to be joined by Washington Capitals play-by-play voice Joe Beninati in the final hour. As well, the Jets head to Edmonton on Monday, play the Oilers. Dave Jamieson from our TSN radio affiliate in Edmonton is going to join us. And Jim Jamieson from the Vancouver Province is going to join us to talk about the Canucks ahead of the Jets' visit to Vancouver on Tuesday. So we have two Jamiesons on the show today, Richie.
Yeah, it sounds good, Drew. I mean, there's the Jets have two important games against those teams this week, yeah. Edmonton and Vancouver, and on the back-to-back set, this is the second last back-to-back set of the season. And frankly, Oilers are obviously a terrible team, but I don't think Vancouver is that good.
No.
And I think those are two games certainly for the taking for the Jets. But of course, you can't overlook a Washington team that went into Minnesota on Thursday, beat the Wild, and has totally change the look of their team, and I think that really starts. We'll talk about it throughout the show, but I think that really starts. Forget the Ovechkin changes that people have seen. Forget Barry Trotz, who's been a huge factor for sure, and Braden Holtby. It starts to me with the defense. The defense has always been the issue for that team, and 1 through 6. Heck of a lot better than they've ever been talent-wise, and I think that shows in their game.
Sure, and we'll talk about the Caps probably more next segment. We'll look at the playoff race in general to start right now. Sort of nice last night, Richard, in that for Jets fans who've been doing nothing but scoreboard watching and chewing whatever remaining nails they may have left on their fingers, last night was sort of a night off for everybody. There was the one game in the Western Conference, and it was Colorado and Anaheim, I believe, so that had no real bearing on any playoff races. Anaheim is secure atop the Pacific Division. Sure, they're battling for the President's Trophy, but for most everybody, that you can take the night off and you can say hello to your families again and recuperate after what was an exhilarating Thursday night against the Blues with a lot of out-of-town scoreboard watching attached to that, and then getting yourself set for Saturday tonight against the Minnesota Wild, against the Washington Capitals, a key game as they've been in town waiting since Thursday after they beat the Wild.
And kind of a different look, Drew. You had your San Jose game on Tuesday, a pretty soft squad that, to me, is on the way down, to most people, I'd say. St. Louis team that came in and an aggressive squad, a deep team, doesn't give you a ton.
Yes. Much more of a litmus test for the Jets playing against the St. Louis Blues on Thursday than it was against the San Jose Sharks on Tuesday. You could see that against San Jose, it's a key is just, let's take care of business. We're better than this team.
Yeah.
And they demonstrated that. And then the Blues, it's, okay, this is a benchmark of a team. We want to be the St. Louis Blues for the next decade. That's, in and around there. We want to be up at that level.
Washington's a little bit of a hybrid of the two. The first thing is that Holtby is better than Brian Elliott.
Sure.
I'm not sure who's starting in that tonight. That's been announced.
I believe it is Holtby.
Holtby is better than Brian Elliott, and Holtby is better than Antti Niemi or Alex Stalock. So, first off right there, the goaltending is going to be better for the opposition. And because you look at some of the goals that were let in, and the Jets played well in both games, of course. The Adam Lowry goal on Antti Niemi.
Sure, from behind the red line.
It was an awful goal. Drew Stafford's goal on Brian Elliott was a terrible goal, too. You can't let a backhand in from just around the faceoff dot.
Yeah.
A low backhand blocker side when you're cheating. So it's going to be harder to score today because of the goaltender, first off. But the Jets did take care of business this week, and Washington will give you some grit. There's also the top-end skill. So, see, San Jose had the skill, but not really the grit.
Well,
St. Louis has the grit, but not as much top-end skill. You could argue that.
Tarasenko,
You could argue that, but Ovechkin is Ovechkin.
Right.
In terms of, and they don't have a Backstrom. They do not have a Backstrom. And I like a lot of their players. He's the best. He's a top-five passer in the National Hockey League. The Blues don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
Although they moved the puck real nice on Thursday, so it's gonna be a challenge. I mean, we saw what the Jets had to do with Washington in Washington, and Jets unraveled a bit in that game. I don't expect that to happen today, but it will certainly be harder. You know, you have to execute against Washington because they are able to beat you in different ways now.
Sure. Right? They're not as one-dimensional as they have been in past, in that they were strictly offense and, you know, lacking in defensive responsibilities.
They can defend because they have six good defensemen.
Yeah.
They can also defend because their team is willing to defend more as a team.
That's right. They've bought into, they've bought into Barry Trotz's system. You talk about, you know, the defense, but Barry Trotz, I mean, I think the influence that he's had on that team can't be underestimated.
No,
he's a hell of a head coach, and you're seeing it as quickly as he's been able to sort of turn around a Washington franchise that had been in the doldrums
for
a number of years.
And that's a huge factor. The other huge factor is that you bring in Brooks Orpik and Matt Niskanen.
Sure, and people criticize them for overpaying, and you know the contracts are probably a little too long. You know,
Niskanen's not necessarily too long. You might say it's too much.
Right.
It's Orpik's is too long.
Yeah.
And we acknowledge that. I thought it was a bad contract, and I still think it's a bad contract. But as we said in the season preview show,
it's going to be a bad contract in year four,
five,
six.
In this year, in a vacuum. I like the ability of adding a physical guy to complement a guy like a John Carlson, and have Niskanen be complemented by a guy like Carl Elsner, and allow Mike Green to do the things he's able to do offensively without as much defensive pressure. And then you bring in a guy like Tim Gleason. You set roles for your players. That's one thing Barry Trotz has done very well, Drew, is he set roles for his players. And that's really important.
Absolutely. Let's get back to the wild card picture in the Western Conference. You look at it, 11 games left, 11 games for the Jets, 11 games for the Wild. Both teams with pretty much identical schedules. I mean, you know, game here, game there, of course. But, you know, Washington was in Minnesota on Thursday, and now St. Louis is in Minnesota tonight. So those two teams are just swapping, really, in terms of who they battle. You know, if you look back at Thursday night, and I mean, we were doing the sort of our post game work, and we were looking at the Canucks score, and it was 2-0 for the Canucks, well into the second period at that point in time against the Blue Jackets. Blue Jackets team that doesn't really have anything to play for. And okay, 2-0 Vancouver. You think they're just gonna keep pace. They're gonna win against Columbus. They're already up two goals. Lo and behold, you get home after the game, they've given up six unanswered goals. That tells me there might be something more there than just a straight loss like Minnesota suffered, losing 3-2 at home to Washington. You give up six unanswered on home ice against a team that's completely out of it in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, that's a bad
loss. It's troubling.
That's a bad loss. I mean, do you let it carry over? We'll see today.
Yeah, they play a weird schedule in the NHL this afternoon.
Yeah.
The Wild and the Blues will start in about 50 minutes time, 1 o'clock. The Wild and the Blues from St. Paul. And then there's two other afternoon games, and that's the Kings Canucks.
Important games for the Jets fans.
Important games. I mean, and really for the Jets fans, I think what you want, you just don't want it to be a 3-point game.
Well, yeah, you want St. Louis to win and the other game to be not a 3-point game.
Yeah, you want St. Louis to win definitely against Minnesota. But I mean, if you'd say, you know, who do you want to win, LA or Vancouver? I mean, I think you can probably make the argument that you're okay with Vancouver winning that game, because no matter what would happen then tonight between the Jets and the Capitals, the Kings wouldn't leapfrog anybody.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall, Kings probably be more successful down the stretch here than the Canucks will be. So, you know what, Drew? Hoping for one team over the other, it's
I know.
Your allegiances switch all the time.
That's right.
So, take care of business here, and then you'll worry about the rest.
That's
or you
right.
don't have to.
Jets fans and the Jets, you know, win against Washington, and it doesn't matter what happens with, you know, with all the other teams.
Especially if you look at the upcoming week, which we'll talk about. But, I mean, you have, as we mentioned off the top, Edmonton and Vancouver here, two beatable teams. And then you have Thursday against the Habs and Sunday against the Hawks. So
yeah. And then Tuesday against the Rangers, who might be the best team in the NHL altogether.
Yeah, very good, yeah. And all those teams can skate. So Vancouver's not as fast as any of the three teams they play later in the week. Washington has a mix. So, you know, you got to take care of business today. And really, in these next three games here, you want to get at least 4 points. Forget the road, forget the back-to-back. At least 4 points.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement. You look at Edmonton, and that's a... It's a win you have to have.
Have to have.
Which they haven't had. I mean, they had to have that win in Toronto on that Saturday night a couple weeks ago, and they only got the 1 point. You go into Edmonton, I mean, Oilers have nothing to play for. They're playing better hockey under Todd Nelson,
good.
But they're not that good.
Good.
And, and, you know, you're a playoff team. Or you think you're a playoff team.
Yeah, no, the Jets are far superior to the Oilers, Drew, and they're, to me, superior to the Canucks. Now,
yeah.
You know, you're playing back-to-back there. But no, I think 4 of 6 for sure, minimum.
I agree with you there. The other game worth noting on the out-of-town scoreboard, Columbus is at Calgary. That also at 3 o'clock this afternoon.
Yeah, so, I mean, the fans are going to be flipping between those games and March Madness. It's a great hockey day, a great sports day today, really.
Yeah, and the truth is, by the time the Jets take the ice at 6 o'clock tonight, they're going to know what their opponents have done.
I'm not sure that's a great thing, though. I wonder if Paul Maurice will even be telling them the scores. I know they have phones, but in all honesty, because if you... I mean, he'll be telling... I'll put it this way. Paul Maurice would probably mention in that room if all those teams win. Calgary wins, say LA wins, and Minnesota wins. But if not, I don't think he's going to be saying, hey, we can...
You can take the foot off the gas pedal now.
I mean, he'd never say that, Drew, but I mean, it's human nature, right? So, not that you're ever going to have foot off the gas pedal, but... You feel it. You know when you need to get that.
Well,
you can certainly say they need it in any event, and I understand that. But
desperation, the fear of missing the playoffs, those are great motivators.
Yes, absolutely.
You're up against a very difficult Washington team tonight, which is, they're loaded. I mean, you got Ovechkin and Backstrom, and I think it was Remus who tweeted it out yesterday, that yesterday was the 2-year anniversary since the Jets lost those back-to-back games at home to the Washington Capitals. I think it was a 10-1 cumulative score over those last two games during the lockout-shortened year when the Jets were really, killed their any playoff hopes they had.
Those games have no bearing on today.
I agree. The different teams altogether.
No bearing.
For the guys that were in the room, you don't think there's a... Nah. I mean, I know it's 2 years.
Coaches.
I know. I get it. But they remember what happened... I mean, these guys have memories that can pop up every now and then, and I agree it shouldn't change how you play the game, and it shouldn't impact it that dramatically. But I think these guys that were in the dressing rooms then, when they were in
How many are still around?
Well, the core is still around. The depth players have changed it out. There's no doubt about that. But the core is still around. And I think to some extent, I mean, I know that you sort of discount that. And we had this conversation on midweek Wednesday, when we talked about the Blues game and the sour taste, I think sometimes professional athletes use whatever they can to try and get some extra motivation.
I think making the playoffs is the extra motivation.
I agree, but that extra motivation...
What happened was that 3 seasons ago now? Two seasons ago?
2 seasons ago, I believe. It was in the lockout shortened year. So, look, every game from here on out has the motivation of making the playoffs. So when you need even a little bit of an extra boost, it wouldn't shock me if those guys sort of remind... if Ladd goes up to, I guess Little and Bufflin are both out of the lineup, so Ladd goes up to who, I guess, at that point in time? Frolik, and he says, remember what happens, or Wheeler, he goes up to Wheeler, and he says, remember what happened when those guys beat us 10-1 when we were in a playoff spot? Let's make sure that doesn't happen again.
Goes up to Trouba and Scheifele, and
I know those guys weren't there. I get that your point is completely.
Half the roster's changed.
I know.
And they had different coaches.
I know. You're completely right, and I'm probably wrong on this one. It's just something that I tend to believe, and I probably have no basis in it. I shouldn't believe it, but I tend to.
To me, it's always a coaching thing. Coaches carry it with them to motivate the team, but if the coach wasn't there,
sure.
How does he put himself in that position to...
That's right.
That's what I feel like.
Fair point on your part. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look more at the Jets and the Capitals game this evening here at MTS Center. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to TSN 1290 online, tsn1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226. Or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. I actually enjoy saying that "don't be an Ezzy" line more often when he's not here than when he is here. I don't know what that says.
Well, Ezzy was in Vegas, and then he's like, "Yeah, well, don't worry, I'll be back on Saturday," and because he's going through Grand Forks,
so right?
He's like, "I'll be back on Saturday sometime during the show." Well, I'm like, "What time do you land, Ezzy?" He's like, "I think at 10:30 or 11." I was like, "Yeah, but you have to drive back. Remember that part?"
Yeah, the drive. Yeah.
He's like, "Yeah, oh, that's right. Well, maybe I'll come by the show," and I was like, "Hey, you have to, pick up your car. Uh-huh. Maybe you might get a bite to eat.
You might cross the border.
Clear customs. Yeah. Yeah, you know, try and make it to the game.
Yeah. Game seems like a better target. 6 o'clock seems like a better target than, you know, rushing here to sprint in rapid fire at 2:55. I'm here, guys. Yeah. Oh, well, let's talk about the Jets and the Caps tonight at MTS Center. Richard, you know, obviously, these two teams don't play each other nearly as often as they used to. The last time they played it was a few weeks ago in Washington, where the Capitals handled the Jets quite easily in that game. Really wasn't even very competitive at all. The Jets got into a ton of penalty trouble, and you know,
well,
they were
seems
just,
to have really calmed down lately.
Yeah, we're certainly not. You certainly don't see the games, you know, lately. Like you said, you don't see the games where they give up 8-9 shorthanded attempts in the course of a game, and you know, they don't seem to take nearly as many sort of cheap stick fouls like they did, they had the reputation for doing about a couple months ago. So you look at tonight's game and you look at the Caps and you look at the Jets. What jumps out to you as sort of the key between these two teams?
Well, what's the key? I mean, Drew, you have, it's always matchups, right? And I think you kind of have somewhat of a similar issue. It's these top two lines and how they match up against each other. So by that I mean, you know, you have your Backstrom line.
Yeah, Ovechkin, Backstrom, and Johansson.
Yeah, and the way you've been employing your defense, you're going to have Myers and Enstrom up against that line. And they played really well lately, Myers and Enstrom have. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to, you know, there's going to be a transition element to that playing against Ovechkin and his ability to break away with that speed. It's the passing ability also of Backstrom. You're playing, that's more of a speed line and a skill line. Like, they're not going to be that physical, although they're strong players. I mean, Johansson's not a big guy, but the other two guys, Backstrom and Ovechkin, are strong.
Sure.
But it's not going to be a physical line, so that's going to be a solid matchup for Myers and Enstrom. Enstrom's not going to get bodied much.
Yeah.
You know, when your right winger is going to be Johansson.
Yeah, he's not going. Yeah,
he's a small guy, right? So you're not going to lose the necessarily physical battles there. And your other matchup's likely going to be that second line, which is Kuznetsov, Glenn Cross, and Brouwer against Trouba and Stewart, which makes sense because you have Glenn Cross and you have Brouwer. They mix it up a bit, and Kuznetsov's a talented player. So I think that's what you're going to see the matchups be tonight. And something to note is the Jets' third pairing is going to have a challenge because this Washington team is, you know, at least three lines can score on you. Eric Fair's done a nice job centering the third line with Joel Ward and Jason Chimera. And that line
resuscitated his career since he was here in Winnipeg.
It really has. Chimera gets in on the forecheck real well. All those guys are willing to be physical. Ward can shoot it, and they're good players. So and Fair's got pretty solid hands. So and then you have your fourth line there of Brooks Lake and Lada and Wilson. They got a physical line. Brooks Lake isn't what he once was, but it's a physical line. And so they can beat you different ways. So Jets' third pairing is going to be important tonight, as it was against St. Louis. Different way. I mean, St. Louis' third line the other night before they swapped Stastny onto the line with Tarasenko and Schwartz. What they did is, you know, you're going to have that line, Stastny, Berglund, wasn't doing 10. They're not going to be that physical against you. This line, third line, is going to be physical against you. So not that that third pairing for the Jets can't handle it, but it's going to be a challenge, a different challenge. And then conversely, you look at, you know, the Capitals. Well, they're going to have their hands full with the Stafford, Wheeler, and Scheifele line that's really been going.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume you're probably going to see, I don't know, because their pairings are pretty similar. You have Orpik and Carlson, Alzner, and Niskanen. I'm not sure how they want to employ that. And then you have Ladd. You have Ladd's line, which will be the other one that other pairing will match up against. If I had to guess, I'd say you'll probably see Alzner and Niskanen against that Jets top line, only because Alzner's a little more mobile than Orpik is, and that Jets line can get on you with some speed.
You're talking about the Stafford, Scheifele, Wheeler line.
Yeah, and then you have your Ladd line against a guy like the pairing like Orpik and Carlson. It could go either way. So those are going to be the matchups tonight, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you have the Netminders, which is you know.
Braden Holtby for the Capitals. Andre Pavlik gets his fourth straight start for the Jets after, having played lights out for the last three games.
As he should.
Yeah.
That's a tough matchup.
Well, Braden Holtby has been an absolutely fantastic story for the Washington Capitals this year. And we know he had talent. I mean, we've seen him display flashes in past, but sort of had plateaued for the last couple years, probably more of a function of the defense that was playing in front of him for the Capitals.
You know, Drew, I think Mitch Korn's done a real nice job there coaching-wise, too, you know, getting him confident. They have a good relationship. the potential we knew was always there.
Yeah.
And so that's a tough matchup. To me, this is a 3-2 game either way. I know that's probably the default score in the National Hockey League. This is a 3-2 game. Both teams can defend. Both teams have the ability to get some offense up. It's a 3-2 game for one or the other. And you have to play disciplined style. You know, we talk about what's important in the game today. Well, of course, what's important in the game is to keep the Capitals off the power play.
Sure. Yo, their power play is absolutely dynamic. Tops in the NHL on the power play. 25.2% success rate for the Capitals.
You take four penalties, you're going to get scored on tonight, likely. And that's the thing, is because Ovechkin can kill you on the off-wing slap shot. Backstrom's a top-five passer to me. You have the defenders who can play on the back end who have great shots. Mm-hmm. You have other guys who are very talented. And guys, you know, Brouwer can shoot it. He's good in the high slot. Go to the net. So you have there's a lot of danger there. So if the Jets play a disciplined style, the Jets have to play. Not if. They have to play a disciplined style. And they have been doing a lot better job of that. So I feel more confident about it. Pavlik is going to have to be solid side to side, which sometimes been an issue with him. He's a big goalie.
Which he was good on Thursday against St. Louis.
He robbed Oshie.
Yeah.
And I think the more impressive save was robbing Pietrangelo, because that was a little more technically sound. That Pietrangelo chance was born out of the Jets overcompensating, understandably so, for Tarasenko on his off wing. So what you will see is something similar today. Tarasenko was compensated. They were overcompensating for Tarasenko. They will be overcompensating for Ovechkin, because you have to, because his one-timers, arguably him and Subban, to me, are probably the best one-timers in the league. So if you're going to overcompensate, what's going to happen is there's going to be an available weak side pass. And Pavlik's got to be aware of that, and he's got to be as strong as he was against St. Louis.
Yeah, I mean, the Jets, you know, very well might go into, you know, on the power play. Obviously Washington will get some power play chances. It's unrealistic to expect them to get none. And the Jets know, I mean, their game plan will be, okay, we're going to try and take away Ovechkin's shot on the power play. We're going to get the puck out of his hand and take our chances on somebody else beating us with that.
It's not even so much out of his hands as much as it's just, like, he doesn't hold it for very long.
Right.
It's just not allowing that pass to get through. So you have to compensate with your forward on that side and your defense on that side, being able to team up and rotate properly.
Yeah. From the Jets' perspective, their forward groups, I mean, Brian Little still out of the lineup today. A lot of people had hopes that he might be able to check back in. He's not in the lineup. Dustin Byfuglien also not in the lineup tonight, so they're going with the same group that they've seen, you know, last couple games, which has had success.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you'd obviously rather have Little and Byfuglien in your lineup. Do you see any, you know, what's the weakness, if there is one, you know, on the Capitals that the Jets can try and exploit? Is it the speed of Stafford, Scheifele, and Wheeler? Is that where
Drew, I don't think there's necessarily too many weaknesses on this Capitals. You know, would you like maybe another top six guy? Is Glenn Cross at that level? But you're nitpicking there. I don't think there's many weaknesses on this team. I mean, this team's focus and buying into defense, they're as good as any, really. I do believe that. Like, I don't think anybody wants to play this Capitals team in the playoffs. I mean, there are teams I think are a little bit are built a little bit better than Washington, but
sure.
I don't think this is a team I look at and say, oh, you know, there's a ton of weaknesses there. Sure, you can take advantage of Schmidt and Green on the back end and third pairing defensively, but which third pairing can you not take advantage of in some sense?
Yeah.
And Green can certainly move the puck real well. So I don't think this is a team with a ton of flaws. I really don't.
You look at Braden Holtby's numbers on the year, 35 wins, 18 losses, 9 overtime losses. So, I mean, anytime you got a goalie pulling up 35 wins, you know you're doing something right.
Mm-hmm. And you're riding him.
Yeah, and you're riding him. Save percentage of .925 and a goals against average of 2.18. It's a good team, and Braden Holtby is a guy that, you know, a lot of people have pegged as a future Olympian, assuming the NHL goes back.
Sure.
You know, could certainly be, you know, slotted in behind Carey Price among top Canadian goaltenders.
Yeah, for sure, Drew. I haven't heard that chatter yet, because I don't know if the Olympics is going to be an under-25 team, an under-27 team, and an under-21
that's
team.
That's right. Yeah. And actually, only players that have letters starting, the last name starting with A to P, can play for Team Canada.
I can't wait till they manufacture the World Cup. It will be the worst tournament ever.
Yeah, that's already happening. It's well on its way. We're being tongue-in-cheek, of course. But, I mean, you look at the Canadian goaltenders, and, I mean, Carey Price is atop both of our lists. After Carey Price right now, Braden Holtby is probably in the conversation of...
Well, certainly in the conversation.
Yeah. I can't think of a better, a second best Canadian goaltender off the top of my head right now.
It's a fair point.
Yeah, I mean, he's been dynamic for the Washington Capitals. And like you said, you know, more commitment to team defense, the influence of Mitch Korn as the new goaltending coach in Washington.
All factors.
I think he came over, where did he come over
Nashville.
From? Nashville, that's right, of course, with Barry Trotz. And the influence of Trotz. This is the Washington this isn't the Washington Capitals team of old where you couldn't get anybody to back check if their lives depended on it.
Also, they're more physical.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you bring in two guys, like you said, you bring in the guys like Orpik and Niskanen who know how to patrol the back end and shore up, you know, potential weaknesses there. It makes an impact right through the entire roster.
Adding Washington, they can roll their four lines. Their fourth line is better than the Jets' fourth line, so you have to watch out for that matchup, too.
The fourth line. Well, Brooks Lyke, I mean, you know, like you said, he's not the same player that he was.
He's had so many injuries, the groin injury, different injuries to the lower body. It's tough for him to have the speed and... Not to say that he was Pavel Bure, but, you know, it's like Jim Slater. You have all these lower body injuries. It's tough to be able to skate like you used to.
That's right. You just eventually they catch up on
you. More skilled than Slater, but it's that idea, right?
Well,
I mean, it's not like he's not trying. It's not like Jim Slater's out there not trying.
Just doesn't
can't
have
get
the,
around there.
That's right.
Yeah.
You saw, you know, when the speed goes, when that's a key element of your game, when your speed goes,
right.
It's very difficult to compensate.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, Antti Miettinen, when he played here, he didn't have any speed anymore. You could see he couldn't keep up with
was
the game.
Was he fast before?
No, he wasn't fast before, but you could see he was three steps behind now.
Yeah, he's not. It's hard to be as effective when, like, you know, for example, like a guy like a Brooks Orpik who's never built on his speed. I mean, his game has always been built a certain way, and he's able to compensate even if he loses a half a step.
That's right.
Forwards, it's harder, Drew, in the sense that you have to get on the forecheck. You have to be skating all the time. Defensemen are able to utilize their, you know, kind of minimize their movements, and depending on the situation, they have to position themselves well. They can make up for it.
Yeah. Should mention the Caps' penalty kill. We talked a lot about their power play. Their penalty kill is nothing to write home about. 18th in the league, 80.9%, so right in the middling area.
Yeah, the Jets' power play is nothing to write home about.
That's right. So that's the difference, though, is that it's not like you're dealing with a Jets power play that's a top league. It should be a very interesting battle between these two teams. Caps 6-4 in their last 10, won three games in a row, though. So they had a little bit of
They did have a lull there for a bit.
Yeah, they did
so
have a lull
now
there.
The Jets are catching them kind of on the way up.
That's right.
Back up from that lull.
Oh, and
I think Trotz probably at the end of the day, if you asked him off the record, he'd probably tell you that was good for us. We needed to kind of see that we're not that good.
Sure. Recalibrate a little bit.
Exactly. Right before the playoffs.
Right before the playoffs. Because, yeah. I mean, this Caps team can certainly still finish anywhere between... You know, the first in the wild card spot, and they can easily get up to second in the Metropolitan Division. They're only 2 points behind the Islanders.
Yeah, the Ottawa's two games ahead of them and 7 points back, so I think they're looking at it both ways.
Sure. If you lose, you could certainly fall back, but I mean,
I don't think that's really a prospect, but it's the idea that in your head, you always want to be sure that you're motivated.
That's right. They're still playing for something. It's not like they're locked in and, you know, going to finish definitely first in the wild card. They can still get up. They could get a home ice advantage in the first round of the playoffs.
They could. And this is a team, again, I think is more mentally tough than they've been in the past, too. That's a part of why they've been so good. And I don't think anybody wants... I mean, again, the East, I think, is anybody can beat anyone. And Washington certainly included in that.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to ask the question. You have $5 million to spend on one player. Is it Drew Stafford or is it Michael Frolik? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Shortly past 12:30 in the afternoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock, producer Remus back at the station, producer Jesse here on site with us. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Of course, Easter coming up, Passover coming up. Contact Bernstein's Deli. They can take care of all of your needs for those two fine holidays. Richard, two unrestricted free agent forwards among the Winnipeg Jets, Michael Frolik and Drew Stafford. Obviously, Frolik been here for a couple of years now, having been acquired from the Blackhawks. Drew Stafford acquired in the Evander Kane deal, along with Tyler Myers and, you know, the prospects as well, Brendan Lemieux, Joel Armia, first-round pick. If you had $5 million, if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, you have a blank check in your hand for $5 million per season. And I'm not saying $5 million will necessarily get it done. Which one of those two guys are you targeting this offseason to come back as a member of the Winnipeg Jets?
For $5 million?
Well, I'm saying that's...
Neither?
Okay.
Had that ticket, I'm not signing either of them at $5 million.
They're going to get...
You know I like Drew Stafford.
Yeah.
How long have I said in the show before they acquired him? I thought he'd be a nice fit.
You have said that for a while.
And so you know I like him.
Yeah.
But, you know, 30 games do not a career make, and I like the skill that he brings. And if I had to pick between the two, I would pick Drew Stafford because he has more skill than Frolik.
Yes.
And it's harder to me to find skill than it is to find the guy, like smart player like Frolik. Okay, so I will say that.
Right.
But what is the term that we're talking about here? I mean, if Michael Frolik is getting $5 million a year, that is an overpayment.
He's going to get $5 million.
He might. It's very possible. I think that's an overpay. If I'm Kevin Cheveldayoff, this offseason he has some flexibility, but the season after he's got Lowry, Shifley, Trouba, Bufflin, Ladd all up.
Yeah.
And Ladd and Bufflin you got to decide on this summer.
We'll talk about Bufflin and contract situation coming up next segment.
Sure, right. That's right, Drew. But I mean, let's if you're choosing between the two, to me, you're choosing Stafford because of what he can do. He can score. And in reality, I mean, you don't have a ton of scores on this squad. So that is how you allot your cash. Now, is he going to ask for $5 million?
He's currently making $4 million, and he'll be an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season.
Right. So is he going to ask for $5 million a year for 4 years for $20 million?
Do you not think he would get that on the open market?
No, I don't think he'd get that in the open market. I don't.
The point of the question is you can only sign one of them.
I have no issue with giving Drew Stafford a 3-year deal at a higher number, a 4-year deal at a little bit of a lower number. Okay?
Okay.
So like a 4-year deal at, 17, for example, 4.25.
Sure.
Or a 3-year deal at 13.5 kind of thing, 4.5 or something like that. Like that's what I would feel more comfortable with. You don't want to fall in love. He's been real good, but you can't just fall in love with what you see now. I mean, there has been, and I know Buffalo was a wasteland for playing.
Yes.
Okay, I know that. We knew that before, though.
Mm-hmm.
And Frolik has been real valuable. And you can't really bring back both of them, probably, because of all the money you're going to be giving on the books later on. Although the Jets are getting a financial position right now, but when you have to sign all those guys.
Right, you probably can't bring back both of them. I agree with you right there. That's why I sort of came up with the question.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
It's a good question. I mean, the Perreault contract gives you flexibility for sure, the $3 million a year. And the other guy's being signed long-term for sure. But you don't think Andrew Ladd's looking for his big last payment.
Well, and Andrew Ladd has certainly outplayed the contract he signed when he came here to Winnipeg.
He's looking for one big last contract.
And
is Buff.
Sure.
I don't know that for a fact. I'm just assuming that.
Well, it's natural to assume that, players, who only have, like you said, they're both entering the...
They're getting up to 30 there.
Yeah, and that's where Stafford is. Stafford will be 30 in October.
Mm-hmm.
So he's probably looking for his big last contract as well.
You're not giving either Frolik or... I mean, you're not going to give Stafford over 4 years.
No, I wouldn't give him over 4 years.
So, I mean, you feel comfortable with 3, I think. But if you have to go to 4, you might go to 4. Because that's what you do now, right? In this day and age, the leverage the teams have is in term, not in money, really. Because there's a finite amount of money you can give. And sure, there's a finite amount of term, but you work within the term to really get the deal done.
Right. So you have both of these guys, and you can probably only bring one of them back. Maybe Kevin Cheveldayoff has another plan. We're just talking in the hypothetical sense of it. You're going to take the guy who's got the more of the skill, the top line skill, the scoring ability. Yeah. I mean, he's got a 30 goal season under his books back in 2011-12, and he's got 15 this year, playing for a combination of the Sabres, who are the worst team in hockey, and the Jets. He's got 6 goals in 15. He's got 11 points in the 15 games he's played here so far. So he certainly made an impact. He certainly looked very comfortable on that left side with Shifley and Wheeler.
Which is weird because he's the right winger. And the thing is, Drew, when you look at it, he can play in your top 6. That's what you want.
That's the difference.
Probably can also play in your top 6. He has, but he's probably best cast in that third line role.
Sure.
Now, there's value to Frolik, especially, in different... defensively, and he can do different things for you, play in different situations, sure.
Can move up and down the lineup better.
Right.
He can go from that third line right winger where probably, ideally he'd be suited, when he played with Chicago during their cup season.
When the Jets are healthy, that's where he is.
That's right. When the Jets are healthy, that's where he is.
Put it this way, if you're slotting in your wingers, you slot Stafford ahead of Frolik when you're doing your lines, or Frolik ahead of Stafford?
Stafford ahead of Frolik.
I think so. So
I agree, because of the top-end goal-scoring ability is the difference maker.
So that's what I would say. I mean, but it's going to be – there's interesting because it's not just this season that you're dealing with. You're dealing with the contract situation, because this, you look at the cap. If it's 69, 70 mil,
yeah,
Jets are going to be in a good position this year.
Sure.
But it's next year, so you can't sign you don't sign contracts in a vacuum. So you're going to have Tulusi and Stempniak and Frolik and Stafford and Slater, all these guys coming up for UFA. A lot of them are just going to let go.
That's right.
It's the issue of who do you bring back, and also whose spot can you fill internally? Okay. So who do you have on the farm? Are you thinking jump in? You know, for the guys, the bottom guys I just mentioned, you can have a lot of guys probably fit in some of your young players, but you want to develop them in the AHL. Then you can sign a one-off free agent to fill that spot for a year.
Right, which is...
You can't sign a one-off free agent to be able to score 20 to 25 goals.
I wouldn't be shocked if a guy like Stempniak was able to came back next year, given that the Jets had interest in him mm-hmm. this past summer.
Who knows, yeah.
And he would certainly fill a bottom six role for your team. And so that's, Stempniak, on a one-year deal, I think certainly would make sense to come back and play here in Winnipeg.
And it's tough to say in terms of the AHL and who's ready to do what role, play what role, right? And what do you have cast for Nick Patan is you're probably not going to, you're going to bring him on to be a scorer, you're going to bring him on in a checking role or a fourth line and specialty role, play some power play, I don't know.
Or is he going to St. John's next year?
Play here in the AHL, exactly, or it's Winnipeg.
Yeah, I mean, that depends on, obviously he's going to be done with his junior career. That's why you're seeing all these guys get signed by the Jets over the last couple days. Jan Kostelic, his junior career comes to an end. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Lodge gets signed. Because those guys are now going to proceed on the next course of their development,
right,
which is to head to St. John's and sort of restock that team, which is in a bit of a down year this year.
The problem you have is if you sign both of the guys you mentioned, Drew, then...
You're talking about Frolik and Stafford?
Yeah, if you sign them both and then say they both want combined, 8.5-9 mil. Well, then you have to sign all those other guys. And I know Trouba and I know Scheif, they're going to be under the entry, arbitration eligible. Lowry as well, because he had a year burned last year. Not arbitration eligible.
Yeah.
And discount, you discount their contracts a bit because of the fact that they're RFAs. They're restricted free agents. But even so, I mean, Dustin Byfuglien is going to ask for a ton. We'll talk about that later in the show. Andrew Ladd, again, is going to try and cash in on his last deal.
That's right.
A big last deal, I think. And, Lowry's not going to be cheap either. His stats aren't necessarily there, but the role that he's played is an important one. So, it's going to be fun if you find this stuff interesting. It's going to be a fun offseason.
Not only that,
ongoing. It always is with these.
Gary Bettman told us that the fans don't care about knowing player salaries and things about being able to track how a team is.
He also
up
told us tickets are
going to
be cheaper, right?
Yeah, obviously we'll talk about Cap Geek a little bit later on in the show. Matthew passing away. Matthew West, the founder of Cap Geek, passing away earlier this week. But one of the more insulting things that Gary Bettman said recently is that the fans don't need to know or the fans don't care about the players' salaries and everything else. Well, he's created a system, Gary Bettman has, where fans have to know about this.
That's
they
right.
have to know about a team's flexibility vis-a-vis the salary cap.
You're 100% right.
Because it's as important as it is knowing a player's stats about how many goals and assists they have.
It's important knowing which jersey you want to buy for it, because if he's on the way out or not.
That's right. If the team can't afford him under their books.
Right.
It's just as important as it as
it's expensive to restitch your jersey. Seriously,
it's $100 to get it done initially. I imagine.
Yeah. These are things that fans consider.
Well, anybody who bought a Bogosian jersey after he signed a 7-year deal here probably is thinking,
you got to restitch.
Yeah, you got to restitch. Yeah. And they need somebody to wear that number again.
That's right.
Or anybody who bought a Kane jersey, anything like that.
So, Drew, I think the question you pose is a valid one. It's a valid one. But with all these guys coming up, you want to make sure your money goes to the guys who deserve it the most.
Yeah, you only have a finite amount you can allocate, and you don't want to ruin the flexibility you have right now.
And the other question is, do the guys want to stay here?
Well, it's always...
Frolik, you hear things, you hear maybe not, you don't know. Stafford, you'd think, guy from Wisconsin, played with some of these guys in the WCHA, played at UND, closer to home, came from Buffalo, Wasteland, You're not going to get much closer to here. I guess Chicago is a possibility and Minnesota in terms of locations that are close to home. But let's be realistic. Chicago has no cap space. And Minnesota, do they want a guy like that with their talent and guys like Jason Zucker who can come in on the cheap?
Yeah.
So
And given the number of trades made between Buffalo and Minnesota over the last number of years, I think if they wanted Stafford, they probably could have gotten that done there.
That's a fair point as well.
Before we head to break, I want to give a shout-out, if I may.
Sure.
Thank you to my curling league wrapped up yesterday. So I want to give a shout-out to all everyone involved in what I like to call the Friday Night Hipster Curling League. It was another great season of curling down at the Granite this year, and we had a great time last night at the windup. Win, loser, drew, unfortunately, fell a little bit short.
How many times did you win? How many times did you lose? And how many times did you drew?
Well, we never drew. So we never draw. There's no there. You always go for a shot to the button there if you're tied in the last end. But we lost in the Seaside Championship yesterday, unfortunately.
But I assume there's only A, B, and C.
That's right. There's only A, B, and C. Exactly right. Anyways, it was a hard-fought year, and a big shout-out to everybody involved in what I like to call the Friday Night Hipster Curling League, and, of course, my teammates, my wife Laura and Heather and
Ryan. How many people are getting shout-outs
That's
here,
it. For God's Everybody sake. Else. Laura, Ryan, Heather, they're my teammates. That's it for the shout-outs. It's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast. On TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Big thank you goes out to the city of Winnipeg. John Doerr at Rumors all weekend long. All four weekend shows completely sold out, so be sure to get your tickets quickly for any upcoming acts. Visit rumorscomedyclub.com for a list of performers and showtimes. A lot of people interested in that question I just posed, Richie, on Twitter, at Legal Curve, so you can get your thoughts in as well. At Jets MIC, at Jets Mike, sign them both at reasonable deals and trade one next year when you need cap space. They will both still have value. At Sharp Skate S, Frolik.
I always love the names.
Yeah,
that's my favorite part of this because I'm not on Twitter.
You're missing out, let me tell you. Frolik all day is who he says. At Oddman Rush says, Stafford is the pick here. Better chance to re-sign him since we're not dealing with agent Alan Walsh and he has a higher skill set. Interesting point of view there. So a lot of good comments coming in via Twitter at Illegal Curve. We want to hear from you as well. Another potential unrestricted free agent, not next year, but the year after, is Dustin Byfuglien, as most Jets fans know. And this has certainly been a topic of conversation on occasion throughout the course of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I bring it up now is because we touched on this last week, is that Johnny Boychuk of the New York Islanders signed a big contract extension, a seven-year deal worth $42 million, a $6 million per season salary cap hit. 31 years old, Johnny Boychuk, having a career year in points with 7 goals and 25 assists for 32 points. Dustin Byfuglien, when he's UFA eligible, will also be 31 years old. His career high, 20 goals, 36 points for 56, pardon me, 20 goals, 36 assists for 56 points. Does the Johnny Boychuk contract drive up what it's going to take to sign Dustin Byfuglien?
Yep.
Already, the segment's over. We'll see you later, folks.
The longer you wait, the more the market's going to drive up cost. Yeah, that's just the way it works, Drew. I mean, these guys don't sign contracts generally for a cheaper price. Michael Frolik's contract demands are going to be higher than they were before because the longer you go, the more the market just continues to rise and rise and rise. So, yeah, does Johnny Boychuk's contract affect the Dustin Byfuglien negotiations? 100%. In fact, I think it's probably a starting point.
A starting point at $6 million a season for a guy.
More importantly, it's the term there.
The 7 years.
Yeah.
I mean, what would concern you most about giving Dustin Byfuglien? I mean, would you have a problem giving him, you know, $8 million a year if it was on a short-term four-year deal?
Well, again, that plays into roster construction.
Sure.
Are you going to pay a guy on the right side of your defense when you have Myers and Trouba $8 million?
Well, that's probably. I mean, what do you think? What's it going to cost to re-sign Dustin Byfuglien?
My opinion is that the most practical solution. And people aren't going to like this, and people aren't going to agree with me, which is fine.
Yeah, don't worry. I'm sure they'll be reasonable about it.
Right. The people, to me, the most practical solution here, looking at age and talent level of the other two big right side guys that you have, would be to trade Dustin Byfuglien in the offseason for a ton.
Does he still get you a ton with only 1 year left before he can hit unrestricted free agency?
If you give a team a window to negotiate, you can at least, I mean, looking at what the market would bear for a guy like, the first round pick that Nashville gave up for Cody Franzen, he's certainly more impactful than Cody Franzen. You're going to be working with the first round pick, a high prospect, I think, and maybe more earlier in the year, or, you know, if it's in the summer. So Dustin Byfuglien for 7 years, and when he's 30 years, when he signed the contract at 30 years old, or 8 years, whatever it may be, at $6-8 million, based on what you have, if your strength is on the left side, I'd say you're probably going to do it. I know the fan, he's a fan favorite. It's not a favorable choice, but I just don't think practically, based on the roster as it is and the costs and everything else, that it makes the most sense to sign him to that big of a contract.
Especially with the right side depth that the Jets seem to have. Yes. And Trouba's offensive game is only going to increase, and it's only going to continue to develop.
You think so.
I don't know think that for so. Sure. I don't know that for sure. You're right. Yeah.
We don't know that for sure.
Yeah.
But you think so. But do you need it to if Myers can move the puck well?
Sure. I mean, and Myers has looked very good since coming here, and he's under contract, obviously, for a significant period of time. Mm-hmm. Probably would be almost the entire length of what Dustin Byfuglien would be signing for.
Well, no, he's here another 3 years after this year, I believe.
Is it? I thought it was four.
I think it's 3 years.
Okay, again, no cap geek, so it's hard to tell on these things.
Yeah, I think it's 3 years after this year. But again, that's, you know, three more seasons. You'll worry about that later, right?
Yeah.
That's what I – personally, people must be thinking, oh, okay, you know, what are you – what do you mean trading the and again, we're in the middle of a playoff. We're following a playoff race right now, so it's not at the forefront of people's thoughts.
No, and the only reason I'm bringing it up is because of the Johnny Boychuk signing.
Yeah, no, I think it's a valid question, Drew. It's an interesting question that you raise. And just to confirm what we were talking about, yeah, Myers is on the books for four more seasons after this one, actually.
Yeah.
Four more. So, and 5.5 cap hit, but the actual amount of money being paid out is not going to be that high. So you have 4 years of Myers after this season.
Mm-hmm.
You have Trouba on, we can assume, at least a six-year deal. Really, I mean, probably at least a six. I don't think they're going to bridge him, but you never know. So a 5-6 year deal there. Are you going to sign Byfuglien for that same term at $8 million, for example? Or $6-7 million?
To play maybe 20 minutes a game?
Well, I mean, you play more than that, but then the other guy's going to play less.
Right. I mean, I think you're right. And I think, you know, if he hits free agency.
And you could say, oh, I want to see what Tyler Myers does next year. We'll see what happens this season. And that obviously plays a factor into it. But maybe I want to see how he is in a new season, in a new environment, when there's not the rush of being on a new team. I don't know.
Sure.
But that's what I think probably makes the most sense. People don't like it. I mean, they could say, oh, trade the other guys. Well, the other guys, you could argue talent all you want, but the other guys are younger.
You look at Dustin Byfuglien.
They're more affordable. And that plays a factor.
Top five offensive defensemen in the NHL.
Byfuglien, yeah.
Improved likely. His defensive game so that he's not, you know, he's not as abhorrent defensively mm-hmm. as he has been or as his reputation has been mm-hmm. Since he first came to Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's much more stable, much more calm there. You know, function of coaching, function of, getting a little bit older, playing a more restrained game with a better group of offensive players around him.
He's got a cup.
He's got a Stanley Cup.
It's interesting to note that Byfuglien has played 593 NHL games.
Sure.
Johnny Boychuk has played 383. So you could argue that the mileage might be a factor as well.
Right. But the offensive upside, I think. I mean, if Dustin Byfuglien was to hit unrestricted free agency, which is quite possible,
mm-hmm.
I have trouble not seeing him get $8-8.5 million.
It's very possible, especially if he puts up dominant offensive numbers.
Right. If he puts up another 50, 55, 60-point season as an offensive defenseman, there's somebody who's going to pony up for that, even at the age of 31. I don't know if the Jets necessarily, you know, should be that team, especially with how their right side currently looks. You know, do you want to pay that much to a 31-year-old player? You know, I think that the Johnny Boychuk contract for a guy who's primarily a defensive.
No, he's better offensively than you think.
I know he is, but
he's never
put up the numbers.
Fine, fair enough. What does he have this year?
32 points.
So that's not bad.
Okay, he'll get.
He's not in the same class as Byfuglien, but he's not bad offensively.
He's not bad offensively, but he's going to get it to 36-38 points.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Which isn't bad for a defenseman by any stretch.
League leader in points is going to have 90 or 85.
Yeah, I know. I get that. I mean, he's not. But I mean, he's not Dustin Byfuglien offensively.
He's not, and I'm not debating that.
Let me ask you this. We expect this offseason Dion Phaneuf is also going to be available via trade. If you got Dion Phaneuf and you have Dustin Byfuglien, both of them available potentially via a trade this offseason, doesn't that increase what the Jets could potentially get for Dustin Byfuglien. There's more people.
Is there a market for Dion Phaneuf?
I think there probably is, because people look at it and they say this is a guy who
Dion Phaneuf, if you're going to get him on a discount rate that Toronto's paying some of his salary, you're taking back a bad contract, maybe.
Right.
But I don't think the market for Dustin Byfuglien is everybody.
Right.
The market for Dion Phaneuf is like three teams. Four or five teams, probably.
Right.
Maybe more teams, depending on what the Leafs are willing to eat in the contract and what else they're willing to take back.
But if Dion Phaneuf is the best available offensive defenseman, this summer, and then all of a sudden Dustin Byfuglien becomes the best available.
I think that
available.
Only applies, Drew, if they're in the same situation. 1 year left on their deals, similar cap. I think with Phaneuf is a complicated one.
Because he's got all... But, I mean, you're going to pay... I mean, you're going to be paying Dustin Byfuglien. If you traded for him, you'd be paying him similar to what Dion Phaneuf is making right now.
Probably.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that they're... I mean, I get your point when it comes to strictly the trade market there. Looking at the two of them, there's probably not a direct comparison. But I do think that, I mean... There's going to be 29 suitors for Dustin Byfuglien in the National Hockey League, and it's
sure.
a tough decision.
For sure,
the Jets are going to have.
If you're
to
the
make.
Edmonton Oilers, and you have a guy, your back end has been a mess.
Yeah,
a guy who can move the puck like that, a big body, add size to your team. How do you not consider it? And you're gonna, that's something to consider. What about Florida and pair him on the back end of him and Ekblad with Campbell coming up on this contract pretty soon. And, Dale Talon there with the Byfuglien ties in Chicago. You can think of a few off the top of your head. I mean, there's certainly going to be a lot of teams that are going to be interested.
Absolutely. Let's head to break, Richie. When we come back, we'll look at the Jets forward lines when they're healthy, when Little and Perreault and Byfuglien are back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 1 hour done, 2 hours to go here on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
1 o'clock in the afternoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. 6 p.m. this evening, the Jets and the Capitals at MTS Center, a crucial game for the Winnipeg Jets in their playoff hopes. The Wild and the Blues getting underway in St. Paul in a matter of minutes. We'll keep you abreast of what's happening in that game, an afternoon contest between those two teams.
Hold on, Drew, why is it on the far TV?
I don't know.
You pull rank here?
I didn't pull rank. I told Jesse he could put it on the close TV.
Yeah,
here.
I know. You're saying you want Kentucky, your little NCAA team, on the close TV, and then the Wild on the far TV, and I complained about that request.
Yeah, I told Jesse he could put it on
hockey
there.
Hockey is paramount of our concerns.
I agree. The reason, it's unlikely, as we're on air here, that you're going to be able to watch the hockey game enough to see play-by-play when goals are scored.
I'll be the judge of that, Drew.
So my justification didn't work in the least bit?
Yeah.
I'm fine with it being switched. I'm willing to be reasonable.
Kentucky hasn't lost all year. They're not going to lose in the second round of the tournament.
You would hope not. And if they do, it's going to be an ugly, ugly incident in the Piles. You're going to laugh. Oh, man. You're going to make an enemy of one Laura Piles, let me tell you that, Richard.
Pretty funny.
My wife, of course, being from Kentucky and this being a birthright to care about the University of Kentucky Wildcats. We'll deal with the fact that you've been sporting a Duke hat lately at another day and time, because that's not going to fly, let me tell you. No more invites over to the Casa Mindell wearing that Duke hat, let me tell you. Jets forward lines when they get healthy. We sort of expected that Brian Little might be back in the lineup tonight. He's obviously not going to be. Seems like he's hit a bit of a plateau in his recovery. Dustin Byfuglien, the same thing as well, hitting a bit of a plateau in his recovery from his injury on the Jets' back end. Matthew Perreault, expectations were that he's going to be back when April comes around, in and around there, and there's no reason to change on those expectations. He has been skating in a non-contact jersey for the last little while, so expectations is that within probably the next week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks to give a sort of a wide range there, the Jets might be back to fully healthy in terms of their forwards, assuming
sure.
nobody else gets injured. How do you see them deploying the forward group when they're back to full health?
Moving target, Drew, right? Because, I mean, the problem you have is right now the Scheifele-Wheeler-Stafford line's going well. If it continues to go well, you don't break it up. We don't know what will happen by the time all these guys come back.
Right.
But if you want to, based on right now, if everybody came back today,
yeah,
you're going to keep that line together, Scheifele-Wheeler and Stafford playing well.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to put Little back with Ladd. Has been overly effective without Little and Wheeler with him. So to me, what you would do is you'd put Frolik, Little, and Ladd together, and then you'd put Perreault certainly playing really well. He'd go back to the top power play unit, Perreault would, but you put Perreault on the third line along with,
Lowry.
It'd be Lowry, and you're probably going to put Stemniak there because he's a right winger. Mm-hmm. And then Tulusti would play on the fourth line with Slater and Thorburn.
Sure.
Or Haluschek on the right side instead of Thorburn.
Yeah, depending on, yeah. You know, that could be dependent on matchups and everything else.
It's a weird combination, that fourth line, but again, it's still skill level.
Would you give any thought to seeing if Matthew Perreault can play, you know, been a center for most of his career?
Where are you putting Lowry then?
I'm not saying the center. I'm saying Perreault. Would you give any thought to putting him on the right side of that top line with Ladd and Little as opposed to Frolik? Maybe make your third line a real bona fide checking line with Frolik.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind that idea.
Frolik playing on the left side. I guess he'd have to play on the left
Perreault
side.
I mean, does play on that right side in the power play, so I don't mind that idea. Yeah.
You're
pretty
okay
good. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay.
Why not? I mean, you explore options. You play skill with skill. If you can do that, I think Perreault might be wasted a bit with the guys like Lowry and Stemniak, only because they don't have the skill of the guys you mentioned. So, yeah, now that could be a possibility. I wouldn't want to Ladd there, but Perreault, you know, he's played well on the left wing, and it's a different angle. There's different possibilities. I'm not sure if he'd succeed there, but he did succeed going from center to wing, and which is an easier transition, of course, than wing to center. As Frolik has demonstrated.
Sure, I mean, so. that was a stopgap measure to try.
The truth of the matter is, Drew, the most practical thing would be to drop. I mean, it just depends. That's why I asked, you know, time wise, when this would happen. If it happens later on and this Wheeler, Shifley, Stafford line calms down a bit, then you're going to put Wheeler and Stafford on the top two right wings because they're right wingers, and you're going to put Perreault on the left wing because he's a left winger.
Sure.
That's the most. I mean, but coaches are reticent to do that when the line is going well. So, I mean, if you take a step back and say, okay, all the lines are playing the same right now,
yeah,
what you're probably doing is putting Perreault with Shifley and Stafford and putting Wheeler back up with Ladd and Little and going at it that way.
In terms of the, okay, I mean, certainly, how much concern would you have? Let's say everybody gets back healthy and they, you know, maybe one game before the playoffs.
Sure.
And
chemistry-wise?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I feel that sometimes the Jets are working, they always work hard, but even working harder when they don't have all their guys because you compensate for the guys you don't have, right? And I think good players work well with more ice time, I think, or with more responsibility, whatever it may be.
Sure.
So is that a factor of chemistry or just a fact, you know, a part of the fact that if you have, say, your three defensemen, we talked about last segment, Bufflin, Trouba, and Myers, they're not going to be playing 30 minutes a game like Myers did last game, because you're not playing Myers 29 minutes, and Bufflin's sitting on the bench, and Trouba's sitting on the bench, no, playing far less.
They're each probably playing, you know, between 20 and 22 minutes a game.
But so, if you look at it that way, I mean, do they succeed as much? So I don't know if it's as much a chemistry thing as much as do you succeed with less responsibility?
Sure. You're saying that some players respond better to having a better, bigger challenge in front of them.
Most players do.
We need this of you.
I mean, most players do.
We need you to do this. We need you to step up.
Yeah, I bet. You know, the thing is, if we've talked all year about when this guy comes back, this guy comes back. I mean, that's not the way it is. You live in that utopian world of every player being ready at the same time. I mean, there's no team in the league who ever has all their guys ready at the same time.
Sure.
So we could project this and that, but it could be happen that Perreault comes back and Frolik gets hurt.
Sure. Well, which is certainly,
you know,
yeah.
That seems to always happen. That's why depth is so important. That's why they tell you 8-9 defensemen in the National Hockey League in the playoffs.
And that's what the Jets now have is much more depth to handle this.
Sure.
I mean, you could say that, you know, I'm sort of surprised at how well they have handled the being without the Brian Little injury. I thought that was going to be much more significant than it has been in terms of wins and losses.
They handled it well. Now, if you look at the goal scoring, I mean, it's been a bit of a challenge. I mean, 2-1 in Tampa, those late goals, and certainly some of their guys have taken the team on their back. But, you know, the win against St. Louis, I mean, these aren't high-scoring games.
Which probably speaks to – which the Jets probably don't have a problem with.
No, I know that, but that's it's not like they're going out without Little and pouring an offense, and then you'd be like, what the heck's happening here?
Sure, it's not –
they're winning as they have to win is what I'm saying.
Right, they're back to sort of playing in the manner in which that they had played for a number of –
yes.
You know, at the beginning of the year when they were so successful, right up to the All-Star break.
That's right.
Tight-checking, low-scoring – you know, defensively responsible, you know, the cliche, good gaps and everything along those lines.
And most importantly, over the past three games, good goaltending.
Well, the good goaltending has been...
Right.
Yeah, it's certainly been a a revelation, because
I mean,
it was 10 days ago. We were last Saturday. We were sitting here lamenting, how do you put Pavlik back in the net against Tampa Bay?
Now let's put it in context. It wasn't as if we said not to put him back at all. We thought it might make more sense confidence wise to have him play against Florida, weaker offensive opposition, than Tampa Bay.
That's right. But I mean, you were expecting
He played really well.
Offensive dynamo.
The team played really
Bay.
Well. The team played really well in terms of preventing Tampa from getting speed and creating opportunities.
Well, you play against the St. Louis team.
I didn't catch the end of that game. I caught the first two and a half periods, basically. So I didn't catch the kind of the comeback part. But they just did a pretty good job of playing defense.
You give up one goal to Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
You're doing something right. Mm-hmm. You give up one goal to St. Louis. You're doing something right.
Yep.
And I mean, you look at that St. Louis game. I mean, Tarasenko, you can see the skill set he provides and everything else. But I thought the Jets did a very good job of neutralizing him to some degree. I thought he was less dangerous
on
Thursday night.
I mean, they gave up some prime scoring chances, Drew. I mean, Paul Stastny had a prime scoring chance off the pass. Jaden Schwartz had a prime scoring chance post-goal by the Jets. Alex Pietrangelo, you mentioned that chance earlier, and TJ Oshie. I mean, those are prime. But the Jets hit, five, six posts, too. So the chances went both
You're
ways.
You're not going to prevent them from getting some scoring chances.
Absolutely.
Because they're the best team in the league.
Yes.
I don't
know if
right
they're the best team in the league, but they're a very good team.
They're in the running for the President's Trophy.
They are. They're one of the best teams in the
league. They're one of the best teams in the league, and so there's no defense. I go back to this, last year again, the Chicago Kings Western Conference Final.
Yeah.
When you have teams with that much skill and that much... And now the Blues probably don't have that exact high-level skill, but they're not far off there. And there's no defense that either the Blackhawks or the Kings could deploy that could prevent the skill from getting their goals and getting their chances. And so for the Jets to be able to only give up that one goal to the Blues and only give up that one goal to the Lightning.
That's what you call a good 1-1 game. That was a well-played 1-1 hockey game. That was an exciting, low-scoring game. And those do exist. I mean, there are a lot of bad games like that.
Well,
that was a good 1-1 game.
The previous game that the Blues and the Jets played here at MTS Center, which also went to the shootout.
Was not as crisp.
You did not enjoy that game.
No, I didn't think it was as crisp. I thought it was a little bit of a sloppy game. I thought St. Louis played a heck of a lot better this past game, and I think the Jets as well.
Yeah, and there's something to be...
The quality of play, that's why quality of play was better.
And that's something that, Jets fans are going to need to see for the remainder of
the quality of play will be high tonight. Washington's playing better, and the Jets have a challenge here. But it's a challenge that they seem to, when you expect them sometimes not to meet it, they meet it. When you expect them not to meet it, they don't, and that makes it fun.
Yeah, well, certainly. If you keep it, you've got to play at that level against a Capitals team tonight that, they certainly, like we said, they're in the thick of it in the Eastern Conference. Right now, a wild card team, but certainly have a great chance of being a home ice advantage, only 2 points behind that in the Metropolitan Division. And so they know that this is a building they've had some success in here in Winnipeg. And, when you're going well, you never want to stop going well.
Of course.
And you never want to get away from what you're doing well. And the Jets, have been tight checking and everything else. It would not surprise me today if we saw an energy level. Let me talk about the energy level for a second. You felt it on Tuesday night. Now, Tuesday night was St. Patrick's Day, so people probably had a couple green beers in them and everything else.
San Jose was terrible.
I know it was San Jose was terrible.
There was no emotion in the arena. They brought nothing.
San Jose brought nothing. But you could feel it. You can feel the atmosphere in the arena.
In the third period on.
Even before, at the start of...
No, third period was like a different level. The other periods you had felt that before. Third period and the overtime shootout was a different level of energy.
Yes, they stepped it up, but it was more than you can tell that the games are getting more important.
No, for sure. I'm saying that energy level was the next level.
Right, because it's not a Tuesday night in January anymore. It's now a Tuesday night in March, it's a Thursday night in March.
That's right.
And you can feel it.
Saturday night against the Capitals, Ovechkin. He only come into town once now.
That's right.
You get to see one of the best players in the world.
And there's going to be that energy level similar to when Crosby was here early in the year. There was that energy level when the best come to town. The fans, the players want to step up their game. Mm-hmm. The fans want to step up their game. And you're in a playoff race, so that even adds extra emotion to it.
Fun.
It should be hopping tonight at MTS Center.
Oh, it'll be fun tonight.
And the Jets have responded on home ice.
They've been a lot better on home ice lately.
For the first time in a number of, there'd been, after that first great year where they were terrific on home ice, when they returned, the first season back,
and we said there's no reason not to be. This is the best fans in the world here.
10-3-3, I think, in their last 16 on home ice.
Good.
You put up that kind of record, you're going to continue doing good things for your fans. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. When we come back, we're going to look at the burning questions for the Western Conference playoff teams.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
1:15 in the afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. We're online at tsn1290.ca. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more like soccer to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me. Richie, we did this on NHL Midweek this week, looking at the Eastern Conference and looking at the playoff teams there and burning questions that each of those teams has entering into the playoffs. We're going to do the same for the Western Conference now. I've expanded it. On Wednesday, we did it just for the teams that are already shoo-ins.
Okay.
Now we're going to look at all the teams that potentially are going to make it to the Western Conference playoffs. That's nine teams.
Let's do it.
The eight that are currently in there, and then the Los Angeles Kings as well. We start with the Central Division leading St. Louis Blues. Jake Allen, never played an NHL playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Elliott, sub-900 save percentage in the playoffs in his career, both in Ottawa and in St. Louis. Can they pass the playoff test this season?
Well, it's possible, Drew. I think anything's really possible. The team's very good. They're deep on the back end. When they get Shattenkirk back, who's skating now, that'll be important for their transition game and their power play. They're really deep at forward. They're big. They're strong. All those things. Good coach. But their goaltending, I don't trust Brian Elliott. I don't know enough about Jake Allen. I've heard good things. I've heard some question marks about him. And I don't personally don't think it'll be Elliott who takes him to the promised land. So if that's the case, then it has to be Jake Allen. And certainly he has some potential to do that, but it's not easy. I mean, if you play the Winnipeg Jets, it's not going to be an easy series. You get through them, you might end up playing Chicago.
Sure.
Then you got to play Anaheim or LA or somebody like that, and then you got to go Rangers or, you know, or Washington or Pittsburgh. So are you going to beat all those teams with the goaltending questions that you have? I would not put my money behind it, put it that way.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, you've looked, the St. Louis Blues know Brian Elliott better than anybody else, and they've seen his playoff struggles, and they didn't trust him last season. Because if you trusted him, you don't go out and you don't trade for Ryan Miller.
That's fair.
Why should Blues fans, why should the team in front of Brian Elliott trust in him this season when management didn't have confidence in him last year?
I don't know the answer to that.
Seems like that would be something that, you know, is obviously not talked about
That's
vocally.
That's what we talked about when they signed Stasny, like a kind of a weird signing.
Yeah.
In the sense that, does it fit the need? Like, you still have that goaltending need that you lost when you lost Miller.
Right.
That you had when you lost Miller. That you had really before Miller.
I don't know if Miller was necessarily the answer, going to be the answer for the regular season either. But it's a lot easier.
Miller's better than Elliott, in my opinion.
But. Yeah, Miller's better than Elliott, in my opinion, too. But, I mean, you look at it, and it's a much different beast to win playoff games than it is to win regular season games. Brian Elliott is a very good regular season goaltender because he plays in front of, with a very good team in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
But playoffs, I mean, you just look at the numbers, and at some point in time, you have to be, you know, you are what you are in the playoffs. Last year, you know, he played six games. He didn't play badly last year in the six games he played. 919 save percentage and a 190 goals against average. But you look at the years previous. When he was with the Senators, his first playoff action, 853 save percentage and a 4.14 goals against. When he was with the Blues 2 seasons ago, 9-0, pardon me, that would be, I guess that's 3 years ago now, I apologize.
Mm-hmm.
3 years ago when he was with the Blues in the playoffs, 904 save percentage. That's not getting it done when one bad goal can sink a team in a playoff series.
I just said that's my question mark. My question mark.
Yeah.
The rest of their team, there's no question marks, really.
What about Jake Allen, then? He's the highly touted rookie.
Don't know enough about him, Drew. I mean, I know he's talented. I've heard good things, but I've heard people tell me he's not the best goalie they've seen. And then I mean, he's let in some bad goals, too. I think at the end of the day, if they're going to ride it out, I don't think Elliott's going to be the guy to take him that place. I don't know if Allen is that guy. But as we say that, Minnesota scores and is up 1-0, scoring on Brian Elliott. That's quite the timing there, eh?
Yeah, it's good timing.
But Jake Allen, I mean, I think he'll have to be that guy. I don't know if you want to compare him to John Gibson or not and trusting the young guy, but it's a lot of responsibility, too. And a team that, again, we talked about Ben Bishop being in the league for that many years and not having the experience. Well, look at it here. I mean, it's when you see, to me, experience isn't as big of a deal when your team doesn't have aspirations of winning the cup. So if you're like Vancouver and you had a young goalie and Lack and Miller was out for the rest of the season,
yeah,
and you know, you give it a shot. Well, what happens, happens. But when you're at St. Louis or Tampa Bay and jobs are on the line.
Sure. If the Blues lose in the first round.
I mean, Jeremy Rutherford was on the show on Wednesday.
Yeah.
He's at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and doesn't think Hitchcock's job's on the line. And I'm not saying it should be
right,
by any means. I don't think it should be. But he didn't say that the job was on the line. He said Armstrong and Hitchcock have a good relationship, but he said it's possible they might just decide to completely mutually part ways.
Well, at some point in time, if you can't get over a hump, and you know, you're almost better off sort of cutting ties at maybe a year too early than a year too late.
Well, I mean, I think really that would be born out of the fact that, you know, Hitchcock, there were some things that he thought maybe he could go elsewhere and start over and make a lot of money and all that stuff.
Sure. They say it's going to be the summer of coaches with Babcock and all this talk that Dave Tippett has an out in Arizona.
You know, McClellan will be available.
McClellan will be available. You got Dan Bylsma still available. Yeah. A lot of great coaches are going to be available in the NHL mm-hmm. market, and that's mm-hmm. something we will obviously pay attention to throughout the course of the summer, more so than right now. For the record, not saying that this necessarily correlates, but Jake Allen, his playoff numbers in the AHL last season with the Chicago Wolves, .879 save percentage in the playoffs and a 3.29 goals against average. And then 2 years ago with the Peoria Rivermen, only in three games, mind you, .888 save percentage and a 3.8 goals against average. So not a pedigree of playoff success anywhere among the Blues goaltending. Moving to Nashville. Can the team with Mike Fisher, the Predators, been one of the great stories of the year all season,
yeah,
sort of struggling as of late? Can a team with Mike Fisher as one of their top two centers truly be a Stanley Cup contender?
I think the better question, Drew, is can a team with Mike Ribeiro as their number one center be
sure.
that team?
You can say both those questions are applicable.
I think that Nashville has, with Pekka and the defense that they have, and I think you can beat anyone. But you're going to have a guy like Pekka who's capable of it, steal you some games, Carey Price-esque.
Mm-hmm.
So can you make that run? Sure. I mean, teams have made that run, like Buffalo before, and goaltenders that get really hot, and you know, Patrick Waugh in the past and all that. But I wouldn't put my money behind it. I mean, to me, that forward group is just not good enough.
2-7-1 in the last 10, the Nashville
Predators. Yeah, probably more real. I mean,
They're not a playoff team.
No, they're not that bad. They're a playoff team, but it's going to be tough to go up against whoever they go. If they go up against Chicago, Kane or no Kane.
Yeah.
That speed and scoring ability, ooh. Because I know Laviolette likes his team to push the pace, but I don't know if you want to push the pace too much against that team. What? They can make the long pass better than you can.
Sure. I mean, you look at that team in Nashville, and I mean, you look at their forward group, and you talk about inexperience again. You know, James Neal has been through a bunch of playoff games with
sure.
the Pittsburgh Penguins.
And then Ribeiro has, Fisher has. Those guys have been in the playoffs.
Yeah, but
if they're talented enough.
Have they ever been that successful in the playoffs?
It's fair. I mean, what Ribeiro went to the conference finals in 08 with Dallas, I believe. And you have Neal who went, you know, I don't know. Neal would have gone to at least the second round for sure. Third yeah. round against Boston a couple of years ago.
Fisher,
wasn't he on the Ottawa team that went to the final?
Yeah, he made it.
So,
I mean, that's a lot of years ago now.
It's just his talent level, Drew. These guys are slotted, to me, too high.
Sure.
So, I mean, if your defense and the goaltending can make up for it, and hey, I feel better about the defense and goaltending making up for the offense than the offense making up for the defense and goaltending. I'll put it that way. But it's risky.
It's what we've spoken about before. You need Pekka Rinne not to be the fifth best goaltender in the league. He has to be
100%.
Probably the first or 1A or 1B with Carey Price when they were both sort of being talked about as Hart Trophy
yes,
candidates.
Absolutely.
And without that, then
Pekka Rinne is going to have trouble in the playoffs, which we don't anticipate. But if he does, then that team is not long for the playoffs, in my opinion.
I would agree with that comment there. We'll do one last team before we head to break, and then we'll pick this up on the other side of our interview. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to be joined by...
Which Jameson's next?
This is Dave Jameson from TSN 1290. Right. Pardon me, TSN 1260
in Edmonton.
Yeah, we should stop drinking Jameson as we're on air. Chicago Blackhawks. Can 40-year-old Kimmo Tiiminen and 36-year-old Mikhail Roosevelt hold up on the Blackhawks' blue line over the course of a long playoff run?
See, this is why... Well, yeah, they can. I mean, well... Yeah, sure, they can. I mean, I don't know if they can. I would think that it's possible they can.
But the point is this, Drew.
You're asking me about the third pairing of Chicago as opposed to the starting... I mean, the number one center in Nashville or the goaltender in St. Louis. Put that in the context.
Sure.
And you see how I feel about it. That's your biggest concern. You're okay, I think.
You're right. When you can trot out Keith and Seabrook and Oduya and Chalmerson for the majority of your minutes.
And they mix those guys up a ton. And, I mean, again, Tiiminen, he stays healthy. You know, Quenneville likes to put him through the blender. And
yeah.
As long as he has the guys out there that he wants, I don't think that's an issue.
You don't think that
I'll put you this way.
Okay.
I have concerns about that bottom pairing, but those guys are playing.
Yeah.
And if one of them were to get hurt, I mean, Quenneville will likely not trust a Rundblad or Van Riemsdyk. He'll likely just put him in the lineup, play him a little bit in just certain situations, and play Seabrook and Chalmerson more.
Sure. Ride your horses, as we've talked about
on
the show.
Now, it's hard to win the cup that way, but you certainly can win a round or two that way.
Yeah, and I mean, right now the Blackhawks would get they get the Predators right now in the first round, mm-hmm. which I think is a good matchup for them.
I agree with that.
And I mean, the Blues are...
And you get Kane back, I would assume, after round one.
Yeah,
if you win round one.
Yeah, and then you
then
get
who wants to play them?
Nobody, because you got a Patrick Kane returning to the lineup and all the Blackhawks.
Nobody wants to play them anyways.
Yeah, no, of course nobody does, because Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, Marian Hossa, Patrick Sharp.
The whole team has cups. I mean, you know, even Richards they bring in, he's got a cup. I mean, everybody they have on that team's won before.
It's won, because they're one of the best teams in the league.
Thiemann's gone to game six against that team.
Yeah, I mean, when he was with the Flyers.
Yeah, so...
And he, I mean, I think sort of the...
They know how to do it.
With Thiemann, he's, I mean, 40 years old, but he really hasn't played this year.
Well, he really hasn't played. He hasn't played until he got there.
Until he got there. So, you know, this isn't the guy who's got, you know, 70 games on him and then they're acquiring him.
Good point.
He's got 7 games on him this year.
Good point.
And so, you're really safe. You know, he's going to play, if they went as far as the Blackhawks always hoped to go.
A maximum of 28 games. Yeah. I mean, he's going to play a maximum of, like, 40 games?
That's right. He's playing half a year. So when you're talking about a 40-year-old defenseman who's playing half a year, with where he's already said he's going to retire after this season, obviously he would love to win a cup with the Blackhawks. You know, having not won a cup in his career,
mm-hmm.
this is a he's got nothing to lose by not giving it all. It's not like he's playing for another contract coming up. It'll be interesting to see. Let's head to break. When we come back, Dave Jamieson from TSN 1260 is going to join us. We'll talk about the Oilers and the ahead of the Jets' visit to Edmonton on Monday night. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.